This episode of Photobomb is brought to you by Headshot Tools Beta, the first platform built to help solve the unique problems of team and event headshot photographers. Automatically rename files, create customizable individual galleries, deliver headshots to any number of participants with one-click individual email delivery, and a whole lot more. Listen for later in the show to find out how you can get in on the Headshot Tools Beta.
You are listening to the Photobomb podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photobomb podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me as always is Gary Hughes.
Hey, man, you having a good week?
I am. Hey, man, did I catch you off guard?
No. I just, just been a busy week for me. I just got a lot going on. Yeah, you know, my lots of jobs, and then my little boy is teething, which is a blast.
Oh, that's fun.
They see, it's not the diapers that bother me. It's not the early mornings. It's the teething. That's the thing that I don't think gets enough. That doesn't get enough press when it comes to parenting. And then the things that are hard about parenting is because basically from the age of 6 months until the age of 2, every few weeks or so, your kid just becomes an intolerable jerk for a few days, maybe a week or two, while these teeth are ripping their way through their gums for the first time. It's I don't think anybody really remembers this happening to themselves, but it is miserable. It's like low-grade fevers, constant drooling. You know, it's a lot of crying, a lot of sleepless nights, and the baby is also uncomfortable at the same time, which is, you know.
It doesn't seem fair, the things that they put on babies.
Like what?
Like pain, like teething.
Right.
I mean, they shouldn't have to go through that, is all I'm saying.
But wouldn't it be weird if a baby was born with teeth?
No, well, it just didn't hurt so much, you know, and yeah, why not? You know, horses are born with teeth.
are they? Yeah, I guess I never really thought about it. Like most animals seem to be born with teeth.
I think, you know? Maybe. Also, what's with the two sets of teeth?
Now this is, yeah, okay. First of all, because if you had your full grown teeth in a baby head, it would be.
Right. But also, okay, so if you're going to give me two sets of teeth, why not give me five? Why don't I just regrow my teeth like every 10 years?
Ooh, that would be great.
Right.
Now except it would make it really awkward in social circles. Be like, oh, I can't go to the party. All my teeth fell out.
They wouldn't fall all at once. It'd be like just like when you change over from your baby teeth. They don't all fall at once. You just lose them like one at a time usually.
My daughter's 8, right? And she's got like half her baby teeth and half a grown-up teeth. She lost her first baby teeth when she was 5. So it's going to take her probably 5 or 6 years to grow a full set of adult teeth. And you really want to be in that transition every decade. So half of every decade is just you with a really weird hodgepodge of like half teeth.
Well, I think if that was the case, it'd be normal and people wouldn't think twice about it. In the same way that you don't think twice when you see a kid that's missing his front tooth. Or, you know, so it would just be, it'd be normal. The other option would be do what comedian Mitch Hedberg said, which was, I don't understand why I need so many teeth. Why can't I just have one that goes all the way across the top and one that goes all the way across the bottom? Like one solid line of enamel. You don't have to worry about them shifting. No braces. It's just one solid wall, the Berlin Wall of white enamel across the top and across the bottom, minus the graffiti. Like that would be a good look and so much easier. Because when you think about it, of all the things you have to take care of on your body over your lifetime, teeth are right up there at the top of the pain in the butt scale.
Yeah, they really are. And the constant flossing that I do like 5 times a day. I'm like an obsessive flosser. By the way, I'm sitting here Googling two things from our conversation. First, are horses born with teeth?
Okay, and what have you discovered?
Foals are born either without teeth or with 4 central incisors, 2 on the top and 2 on the bottom. So there's like a genetic sort of roll of the dice as to whether a horse is born with teeth.
Okay.
So, you know, that's a thing I can't forget. And now I'm trying to Google like an AI image generator to see if I can see what a baby would look like with adult teeth.
Okay. Well, when you'd like to come back to the podcast, let me know.
Yeah. All right. No, okay. I'm a little busy. You go ahead and talk about your day while I try to create an image of a baby with adult teeth. Go ahead.
Which is going to be very entertaining to the people who are listening to us.
Yeah, that's fine, because I'm going to post this into the Boom Booters Lounge so that people can see baby with adult teeth.
All right.
Yeah. So you had something very special happen to you this week.
I don't know that it was special. It was unexpected. I didn't even know it existed. I switched over to Reddit a while ago because I uninstalled.
As opposed to Twitter, right? You've left Twitter.
I got rid of Twitter because Twitter's just become, it's so toxic and just no.
Yeah.
So I got rid of Twitter and I went over to Reddit and I started following different Reddit threads. What do they call them? Boards?
Subreddits, maybe?
Yeah. So I started following different ones, like computer games that I play, and then one for my dog, and one for movies. And the people in the movies subreddit, man, these people love movies. And so someone talks about a movie, I mean, they come in and they talk about these movies, and they're really into them, and they're into the technical stuff. So last night I watched a movie that I had started to watch years ago and didn't finish. So I thought that, you know, but looking in the subreddit, I had seen people talk about how great it was. Well, I sat down and watched this movie. And just an amazing movie in terms of just the way that it's made, you know? Can you hear, mm-hmm. by the way, can you hear the lawnmower? Of course, they're mowing the lawn when we're doing the podcast.
Yeah, they do. That happens all the time. What are you going
to
do?
So it's not just that you've got to be a person who likes movies. You have to be a person who really likes to pay attention to how movies are made. And if that's true, you really, really, really will appreciate this movie. And it's called Hot Fuzz with Simon Pegg.
Oh, that's a fantastic movie. Yeah, part of the Coronado trilogy.
Right, exactly. Right. The first one was Shaun of the Dead and then Hot Fuzz and then End of the World or End of Times.
The World's End.
World's End. Thank you. And it's three movies with the same two guys being the starring actors, but they're not
Simon
related
Pegg
to each other.
Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, yeah.
Right, but they're not related to each other. The movies aren't actually related. They call it the trilogy, but they're not really related to each other. You know, it's not like, you know, Indiana Jones 1, 2, and 3. So many things he does in the movie are just incredible. That the editing is unbelievable, and the way that it parries, it parodies action movies and cop movies, and there isn't a wasted line of dialogue in the entire movie.
No, it's
there's nothing
so
in the movie that's
good.
Thrown away. Everything that is said is going to come back later in the movie. It's going to reference something else that's going to happen. It's just the tightest script I have ever seen. And so I posted in Reddit. I said, I call it Hot Fuzz. Holy crap. How have I not
wait,
seen
wait,
this
Wait, has
movie?
This the first time you've seen this?
Yes, the first time I've watched it.
Whoa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I said basically what I just said to you. This is so amazing. And then I said the thing that helped push this over the top. And I said, I had to stop the movie several times to explain to my wife how great it was. So then here come the comments. And the comments come rolling in. And the last time I checked, which was an hour or so ago, it had been upvoted 7,000 times and had over 1,800 comments. And most of the comments were just, oh, yeah, this movie's so great. And here's why. And here's what I love. But a lot of the comments were like, dude, she should divorce you right away. You never stop a movie to talk about it. What the hell is wrong with you? You're evil incarnate. You just need to be murdered. Because these are people who love movies.
Right. It's not that you're telling, it's not that you're like mansplaining your wife. It's that you're breaking movie etiquette. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And I tried to go back and be like, you don't understand, in my house, there's no watching a movie or anything for that matter all the way through. Because I've got two kids that are going to come in at any moment because I want to talk about my date. Okay, well, we're going to pause now and talk about your date. And so I got two kids that are going to do that. I got a dog. I got a wife who's going to get texts, so she has to take care of for work. And I got to take care of this, sweetie. Now I got to pause while she goes downstairs to her computer to do something. I've got my own businesses to run. So it's just nothing gets watched beginning to end without pausing it. And then the other thing is, when you're a person who's really into something and you're with someone who isn't really into something, you're excited about it. You want to try and explain to them because you want them to be excited too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and you do it with photography. Like when you show a great picture and somebody goes, that's a good picture. And you want to go, but do you understand what they did here with the composition? Do you understand why this is a great picture? Because you're so into it. So a couple of times I pause the movie and I was like, do you see what he just did with those cuts? You're like, or do you see that this whole scene is a parody of action movies? When he's chasing the shoplifter, and do you get that there's a goose and they never use the term wild goose chase? but that's what it is, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, that's a joke. That they're not even telling you that joke. They're waiting. They want you to figure out that it's a joke, and just so many little things. And everyone says watch the movie 7 times, and it'll be better every time you watch it.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've watched it. That and Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
They both are similar in their construction in the way that they have one overarching joke. And the overarching joke in Shaun of the Dead is that the world has ended in a zombie apocalypse, and the British are so reserved that it takes them a few days to figure out that it's happening.
Right.
Like, that's why right. It's sort of like, and the end of the movie, like, it's, they go back to a life with zombies, and it's not that much different than what they were doing before.
Exactly.
So, like, yeah. That's, and then, you know, with Hot Fuzz, it's sort of like the idea of an American style action movie taking place in the British countryside.
Right.
Which is sort of like, you know, those juxtapositions are just kind of they give the image, the movie almost is like about something rather than obviously it's got a story and it's got, you know, plots and whatever, but like the idea that it's just got a theme that everything else gets to bounce off before they decide what to do. Every line of dialogue, everything reinforces that same idea, and it just gives these movies this beautiful consistency and like sort of coherence that makes them really, really, really incredible, I think.
But then the direction and the cinematography is incredible, because there's things that they do where, like, let's have something enter the scene in an interesting way. Let's have something exit the scene in an interesting way. It's like every shot was thought about in great detail. There's a sequence when he leaves the big city to go to the village that is a series of about 10 quick cuts. Him on the train, taxi cab, him in the thing, bang, 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 bang. And it conveys so much in the space of about 3 seconds. Whereas a normal movie would just use this, okay, let's show an aerial shot of the car moving through the countryside, and let's show a shot of this to show the movement of the person from one place to another. And instead, the director's like, I'm going to make this the coolest sequence that moves you from one place to another that's ever been put on film.
That's Edgar Wright.
Yeah, Edgar Wright. Like, just like a guy who obviously was paying so much detail. He just so much loves every aspect of what he's doing on film. And that's what's so... And the more you watch the film, the more you see it. To the point where, for me almost, I started not paying enough attention to the comedy because I was paying so much attention to the filmmaking.
Yeah, he's a really cool filmmaker with a very distinct style. Another one of his movies, I think I mentioned it on the show before, that I really love is Baby Driver. That's an Edgar Wright movie as well.
Baby Driver.
Yeah, and Last Night in Soho is one of his more recent ones, which is also very good. Yeah, it's just got a very distinct, very cool style. And I would also with that movie, because, you know, my wife isn't as initiated sort of in English culture, and that's and why it's some of it is so funny. Like, you can still enjoy the movie, but if you don't understand sort of like small villages right. in England, it's sort of like there's a lot that's sort of for them. And so I would absolutely, but I don't have to pause the movie. You know, I don't have to initiate that. My wife is one of those people that asks you dumb questions during a movie. Like questions that if you watch for 30 more seconds, you're going to find out the answer to that question. It's like, why is he doing that? I don't understand.
Right.
And she gets it.
Just watch. They'll explain who the killer is. Who do you think?
Right, right.
Who's the killer? Well, that's going to come at the end.
Yeah. She's not as bad, though. She only does it a little bit. But her mom... My mother-in-law right. is the one, like, you cannot watch a movie with this woman. And literally something happened. The movie's been on for 30 seconds. And she goes, why is he doing that? Where do you think he's going? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm watching this for the first time, too. Why don't we watch and find out together? You know, like, why don't we wait and see? So I would always have the opportunity to pause and explain. But I get to wait for a question. So I don't feel like I'm not the one who initiated the pause. So maybe I'm not the one who's breaking the etiquette there. But you are dangerously close to being canceled by Reddit, which is
were very upset about it. And by the way, the thing that I do in terms of not pausing, but just speaking out loud, that I do all the time is, I will say, they wouldn't do that. They don't do it that way. That bothers me. When somebody does something, we're like, that's not the way that works.
Yeah.
You know, I notice immediately when it's like, no, cops wouldn't do that way.
You must hate Law and Order. Yeah. Law and Order must really drive you nuts.
So, so tons of people, talking about the movie. And if you haven't experienced Reddit, it's really something, because like you go to that post, for example, and you see that it's got you know, 1,800 comments. And then at the bottom, it will show you how many people are currently reading your post. And there'll be like 300 people currently reading your post.
Yeah, that's wild to think about. Yeah.
So it's it was quite enjoyable.
Somebody are you enjoying
so far,
it more than Twitter?
Somebody went so far as to send me a personal message in Reddit just to say, dude, don't feel bad about everybody trashing you. I stopped the movie too. And, you know, like someone felt bad for me because they were ripping me. And I'm like, oh, please, it's the internet. I don't care. And it got me on the front page of Reddit. So great.
Is that a good thing?
I think it is. Yeah. It's like you get a deal. Like Reddit sends you a personal, they send you a message and like, congratulations, you made the front page of Reddit and here's your statistics. And it's not easy to do. You've got to have just a ton of people looking at and commenting and upvoting, because everything gets that's posted is upvoted, you know, and downvoted as well. So like when I went in and commented and said, hey, you know, in my house, you can't watch anything without having to pause it 12 times because of blah, 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 blah. Like 77 people downvoted that. Like, shut up. Shut up. Shut up with your excuse. We don't want to hear about your house. You're horrible. Just sit there in your horribleness.
This is the thing that people don't understand about the internet, right? This is people they don't understand about social media is once you put something out there, it's not yours anymore.
No.
You can't control something once it's out there. So you put it out there for general consumption and whatever happens, you cannot do anything about. There's no retraction. There's nothing because it's out there.
There's no explaining it away. But here's what I really meant. Oh, no, you should have made sure what you really meant was in the first post, because you don't get to come back and you're supposed to be perfect, absolutely perfect right off the jump.
And or just not care who says what about you, I prefer option B in that case.
Right.
You know, like it's like, I don't think it really matters, you know, like whatever. As long as it doesn't affect my business or my family, it's cool. And nobody's ever going to find out who I am because I use an alias anyway on subreddit. Do you use Booray on Reddit?
My icon used to be my icon for my YouTube channel. And then I was like, that's a mistake. And I got rid of that. And so I just have an alias. Everybody has an alias on Reddit.
Yeah, you don't want to, you know, any of those people creeping up, because people are crazy.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I was like, oh, I don't want people to know who I am and track me down, because how dare you pause a movie and they're outside my house with a machete.
People be crazy. Incidentally, on a previous topic, did you get that picture I sent you?
I saw you sent me one, but what I was doing was I was paying attention to the content I was providing for our podcast listeners. Oh, a baby with human teeth.
A baby with adult teeth. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Looks a little bit like there's a monster that looks like, and I'm not sure what that would be.
Yeah, that is it. That is the.
But
the
that's
stuff
evil.
That's nightmares. This is. This is why you
like,
don't.
You could just
want
make a horror movie and call it Adult Teeth Baby, and that would be the whole idea would be a baby with adult teeth that terrorizes a small village.
Yeah, and it's a perfectly benign, happy little child. It's just horrifying to behold, you know. And so people just start killing themselves and like drowning in lakes and stuff because they run in front of a bus because that they see this horrific looking baby, babies with adult teeth. Yeah, man. So I've got an interesting client issue, and I know that you're really, really good at being indignant about things that don't make sense, right? Like rules for the sake of rules are something that really hack you off, right? Like, there's no reason for this rule. It's just the way we've always done it, right? Would you say that?
I wouldn't say. Yeah, I can be. I can be a little bit about, well, what makes me laugh is when there's a rule for something that you shouldn't need a rule for. Like, please don't eat the silica gel that comes in the package that you buy.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just saying, you're not helping society, because the people that eat that and die from it, we need those people dead because we don't want them reproducing.
Unless they're toddlers, like babies with teeth. Eating,
right, but that's they're totally different. But it's not for them. They can't read anyway.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So if you're able to read and you need to be told that you shouldn't iron your clothes while you're wearing them, then I'm like, no, because that's a thing, right? Don't iron your clothes while you're wearing them. I'm like, no, let the person, we need these people to, their reproduction needs to stop.
Who among us hasn't tried to just iron a little wrinkle out without having to take the shirt off?
I've never tried to iron anything out while wearing it.
Well, you know, that's the thing. The reason babies are born with teeth is so that they can't open those little silicon packets to get out the stuff inside. Yeah, okay. Because, you know, they would, with the teeth, they would just they would just open it up and swallow just the stuff on the inside. So we got this client issue. So, you know, Lockheed Martin is one of my clients, right? So this is a company who makes missiles. This is a company that does fire control systems. This is a company who literally has all of the cool, interesting things that they make are in so many movies and TV shows. They were like, they had a whole, Lockheed Martin actually has a team that works with Hollywood and that works with film and TV to put, to make sure that, and they design things for film and TV that don't exist. So just so that it could be in the movie, they're like, we need a cool looking missile. And then this team at Lockheed is like, sure, we'll design a missile that you can, you know, use in your movie or whatever. And so they do a lot of this type of stuff there, but they are a secure government facility. In order to get on there, I shot about 97 headshots for Lockheed in Dallas this last week. And I photographed 120 headshots for them in Orlando a couple of weeks before that. And in order to get into the facility, we had to go, we had to get a prearranged visitor's pass. I had to park and visit security. I had to wear a badge while I was there. In order to access the Wi-Fi so that I could use headshot tools and make that work, you know, we had to get a pre-approved Wi-Fi, temporary Wi-Fi access password. I had to sign an agreement that says I wasn't going to do any photos or videos that weren't authorized based on the scope of work that were there. There's like a whole lot of stuff you had to do because it is a secure facility where they design and manufacture missiles and the systems that control those missiles. That's what it's called, Mission Missile and Fire Control. Awesome company to work with, by the way. Their people are so, so on it. And I've never been in a company with so many people where everybody seems to really like their job. Whatever you think about a company who just makes weapons, the people who work there seem to really, really be happy there. Now, I also have another client who I will not name because they've been a great client and we love them. But they have multiple places all over the country where we go and we photograph for them. And this one particular one is in Washington, D.C. So we've got the job. We've booked the job. They've paid for the job. I've bought the plane tickets to go to the job. I've got the rental car to go and do the job. And so my company contact has arranged everything. Then the person at that at the specific location I'm going to be at immediately emails a week before the job is supposed to take place, be like, I need your insurance information, your certificate of insurance, your COI. So we send the COI over, which we got a couple of $1 million in liability or whatever. Like, no, I need you to also have an umbrella policy, a commercial auto policy, and I need to see your workman's comp policy. We need all those things. So I'm not going to have a car there. Like, I'm literally taking a cab to the place. So like, they're like, nope, you need a commercial auto policy that covers you in rented vehicles and taxis. I'm like, I don't understand that.
I don't understand that either. What possible liability would you have? For me,
I'm going to have them drop me off at the curb, and I'm going to drag my gear and walk across the parking lot. It's like, because I'm like, do they think I'm going to go get like a multiple $1,000, you know, commercial auto insurance policy so that a taxi cab can take me onto the property today? And by the way, I've worked for this company at other locations before. This is the only location that's done this. And then the other thing is they like, oh, we need an umbrella policy. I had to look this up. So there's like a whole separate policy that'll basically like indemnify them if they do anything to me while I'm there. So not only do I need insurance that's going to cover me if I screw anything up or break anything, which I have, but they want a policy that's going to like, if they accidentally electrocute me, that they're covered under my insurance policy as well.
No, you should have your own insurance for that.
And this company does not make missiles. This company is not a secure government facility. It's literally just like an office building that I have to do all the stuff to go.
So what was the conclusion? What did you do?
Al's still working on it right now. Like, he's just because like we might be able to get something that's temporary or add a rider. I'm not really sure. I don't do the insurance stuff. You know, that's not part of my job description, but we'll get it worked out. But like Lockheed's basically like, send a couple of emails, sign a form, you're good to go. And then this other company, which is basically in an office building who does nothing secure, was like, no good. You need like, we need more paperwork. Right. We need more paperwork.
It sounds like a joke, but literally you need more security than Lockheed Martin.
Yeah. I'm having to jump through more hoops.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, like I'm having to jump through more hoops to go and do this very basic job that I do two or three times a week, you know, for this one company. And I can't wrap my head around it. Like, I know.
Yeah.
So the good thing about insurance is, and this comes from our insurance agent. We have a brilliant insurance agent. And he's like, well, you know, you can always cancel an insurance policy. I was like, you can cancel an insurance policy. And he's like, and you get your money back prorated. I was like, and you get your money back prorated.
Oh, okay.
Like, that's interesting. That's good to know. So I don't want to do it that way because I feel like that's like
right, a
ethical gray area for me to buy a policy that I never intend to use and get my money back. I feel like it's just a waste a bunch of time, but I'm not the one wasting people's time here. It's another person who's
your back is against
this.
The wall.
My back is against the wall. I'm cornered by a baby with adult teeth.
Yes, you're being pushed. You're being pushed into it. You can't help it. I got to rob this bank.
Yep. It's like, no problem. Yeah. I only steal what I can't afford. And that's everything. Exactly.
All right. It's about that time. It's time for photography news.
Photography news. Most headshot photographers struggle to organize and deliver team and event headshots. They either do everything manually, taking up hours of their time, or they homebrew a complex system combining multiple apps. That's why we built Headshot Tools. A comprehensive solution specifically tailored to solve the unique problems headshot photographers face. You'll be confidently delivering the best client experience to any size group without breaking a sweat. Right now, Headshot Tools is in a closed beta where users will get unlimited access to all features, including unlimited jobs, storage, and uploads for only $59 a month. Automatic file renaming, custom signup forms, individual galleries, mass email notification, and retouched image selection, all in one easy-to-use platform. To request your beta access code, just email support@headshottools.com and say, I want beta access. That's support@headshottools.com.
All right, so a couple of themes that I noticed in photography news this week. Let's start off with AI.
AI. Our robot overlords.
Our robot overlords. A couple of stories in AI. One, you had posted this in the Bombardier's Lounge about how Nikon has launched this two-minute video, basically a little ad campaign, social ad campaign, to push back against AI.
Right.
By putting up actual pictures of real places in the world and then putting over that picture what the possible prompts would be to get AI to create it. And the idea is to remind us that there are things in the world that were worth photographing that are as amazing as something that you would create with, or more amazing as something that you would create with.
And they usually have the correct number of fingers when you photograph them too, yes, which is kind of cool. You
know? Always, yeah, always valuable. But what made this stand out to me was it reminded me of, and I don't offhand remember who do it, but somebody posted in the Bombardier's Lounge about AI. And they said, do you really think the camera manufacturers are going to stand by and just let this happen? And so that begs the question of how do you think the camera manufacturer, because they're the front line on this. Like, we can all complain about AI is going to cost photographers jobs and stuff, but it's Nikon and Canon and Fuji and Sony. They're the ones who are really going to come to bear to try and do something. And what do you think that something is going to be, Gary?
I think it'll have to be lobbying governments. I do. I think there's going to be legislation and fast. And we talked about this from a political standpoint as well, that I think the burden is going to end up falling on social media sites and on stock agencies, and in order to identify, like, imagine if there was a law that said when you use AI generated imagery, it has to have a tag on it that says it's fake, right? You know, and that will create a really interesting market and a demand for photography. I don't know if that's, you know, that's the solution. But companies like Meta and companies like, you know, TikTok and companies like, you know, Snap, they're going to be pushed to have it maybe AI that can identify AI imagery, and then it's going to automatically be labeled, you know, like how Twitter and Instagram and stuff, they label like COVID-19 misinformation and political misinformation and stuff like that. Like, that's going to have to come really, really quickly. That's going to have, like, because we're going to have a lot of problems with this. As far as how it's going to affect things economically, I don't know what you could possibly do to stop people from using this. Like, I am casually using AI in my editing on a daily basis now. I use the generative fill, and not just that, but there's like the remove tool that's now in full Photoshop, and it's fantastic. I did like fixing stray hairs, even filling in gaps in hairs, like removing wrinkles from clothing. Like, it's unbelievable and so, so fast and easy to use. That's technically using AI, isn't it?
I think so.
Maybe. And if you're using the generative fill, think about this. Okay, Like yesterday I was playing around with an idea for a YouTube video, coming up with a series of like five things you can do with you know, AI in Photoshop that are really, you know, that are really easy. You don't have to transform the whole scene. Like there was a headshot I had taken where the tie, there was a gap between the tie and the collar. And so I just circled that, used generative AI with no prompt, and it just filled in and matched the pattern of the tie. So it looked like the tie had been pulled all the way up to his neck. Like I did stuff like that, you know, like, and it's, so does that count? Like at what point do you say this isn't a real photo anymore? And, you know, even content aware fill, which I don't think that's AI, you know, still like at what point, where do we draw the line? Right. But I'm not really sure what the point of this Nikon campaign is. I really do like it because ultimately there is an authenticity to photographic imagery that AI cannot capture because it's not tangible. It's knowing that the thing is real, that it exists, and not something that is just slapped together with some kind of predictive algorithm. So I really like this. I would love to see more camera companies start to move in defense of our industry. Because honestly, if Terminator 2 has taught us anything, you know, that AI needs to be very seriously watched and regulated. I really do think so. Like it could get out of hand. It needs to be regulated like anything else. I don't think you can stop it. You know, I don't think you should stifle innovation because AI is going to be able to do, already can do, incredible, helpful, time-saving things for humans with jobs. But I'm not really sure this is going to do any good. Maybe creating awareness, maybe if enough companies get behind it and make this trend so it's like, so that you turn the public opinion against AI imagery, I think that's the only thing, is if people didn't want it or didn't use it.
I don't think you're going to be able to do that any more than you did when they tried to turn public opinion against Photoshop. Yeah. I don't think it's going to happen. I'm curious to see what the camera companies are going to do in terms of hardware, because I think that if I owned a camera company, that I would be talking to my tech people and saying, okay, we need a new camera that, you know, interchangeable lenses and everything a camera does, but it needs to have AI built into it so that it will automatically retouch your face. Let's start with that. Let's start with AI retouching built into it. I want a camera. Anything a person could do on their phone in terms of accessing AI and changing a photo, I want them to be able to do that in the camera. Because I think that's the competition that they're going to have, is people are going to be like, why should I buy a camera when I can use my camera phone and then right there in my, you know, looking at my camera, I can use AI to change that picture and make it whatever I want to. Whereas if I do it with a camera, then I got to download it, I got to put it in a computer, I got to use, no, I can do it right there in my phone. And so many of the limitations that phone cameras have versus regular cameras can be covered up and masked by AI. Like the lack [S2] Right. [S1] Of a telescopic telephoto, an actual optical telephoto, for example, and stuff like that. All of that can be, is eventually AI will be able to fake all of that convincingly.
Right. And plenty of other things as well, you know, like right. removing so noise from images.
What's the next step? They've got to come up with a way to make cameras able to do, a camera has to be able to do something better than your phone.
Right. Right. And objectively, it does. It takes images that are loads better than your phone. But effectively, in how your average person uses their images, right. it isn't better.
No.
Right. So like it isn't like now for photographers, and we open up the images in Photoshop and look at these full resolution. We're like, it's amazing. The clarity, the quality, the cleanness, the file fidelity. But nobody ever looks at them that big ever. And yeah. So like that's why phones are able to pass, because if you took the raw file out of an iPhone or a Galaxy without all of the, you know, the machine processing, you know, the computer, whatever, it's horrifying how crappy those files are.
Oh God,
they
yes.
really are horrendous.
Oh yeah. And yeah. And what is it that, was it Apple that I read that they've completely removed the ability to not have the image be high res?
Yeah, to be HDR.
HDR, yeah.
I made a video about it on my YouTube channel, and I've got lots of hate about that video, but it's fine, because at least I didn't tell people I tell my wife to shut up on Reddit, which is fine.
So the hate is it people, the fact that they think you're hating on the iPhone?
No. Yeah, well, doing any Apple review of any kind is a live wire. I never get so much negative static as when I say anything negative about an Apple product. The Apple fan people are just insane. But it was a video about professional, you know, if you're a professional photographer, don't buy this phone. And then the people were just like, well, they, without even watching the video, they're like, professional photographers shouldn't be using phones. I'm like, everyone uses a phone, you dill hole. Yeah. You absolute numpty. Everybody uses a phone. And photographers are going to want to use those phones differently. They're going to want them to do more things or have more manual controls or all these other things. And so one of my point was, is that in previous versions of iOS, you used to be able to turn off HDR, and now you cannot. That's like every image is HDR on an iPhone, and the video as well. In fact, like if you take a video from an iPhone and you like import it into Final Cut, like to do some editing, like Final Cut doesn't know what to do with it until you like use the right codec to sort of descript the HDR effect. Otherwise, it just looks mental in there. So like, yeah, it's the sort of machine kind of processing, the computational photography inside smartphones is so, so good. I'm surprised more of it hasn't come to cameras.
I also saw a story about a company. Now, we've seen this with headshots, and now this is a little bit of a different take. An AI photo company, and what was interesting about it was that they are specifically taking a shot directly at us. They are advertising their company as, we cut the need for expensive photographers.
Mm.
They're specifically saying, we're here to so that you never have to hire a professional photographer.
And we're here to eliminate an entire industry.
It's called Synthetic Photo Studio, and you upload 30 or more pictures of yourself, and then for a monthly fee, depending on how many you need, you can get AI-generated images of you in any way that you want them. Put me on the beach in Brazil in a bikini and blah, blah, blah. And it will do it. And it's supposed to look pretty realistic. It starts at $29 a month. You get 1,000 AI photos a month for that. It goes up to $99 per month. And I got to believe that the influencers are going to go nuts for this.
You can't put the genie back in the bottle, can you? I honestly think that, like you said earlier, people complained about Photoshop, right? But there was also a huge wave of, holy crap, nobody looks real anymore because of Photoshop. And right. That wave has largely subsided. Like my clients coming in, they don't want to be retouched to hell and back. They're like, they want their blemishes gone, and they don't want to be shiny and sweaty looking. But they're mostly pretty great with looking like they look, you know? And right. So, and that has changed for me over the last 15 years. It used to be like, oh, just fix that all, change my hair color, put, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, and now people are like, I think that sort of the general public view of it is that, like, you know, I'd like to look a little less tired, but, you know, still I want to look like me. And so I think that this AI image generation is going to find its place. It's going to settle in somewhere. I don't think it'll replace photography. It'll replace certain types of commercial photography, no question. Almost like digital mock-ups have replaced a huge portion of the advertising photography industry. You know, whereas like you got a digital product, you know, you designed it in a 3D modeling program that looks damn near as real as the real thing. And you go, okay, so what do you want the ad to look like? Okay, I want it splashing through a stream of water and a bunch of oranges floating up behind it. And you just make that, you know, you just drop it into whatever scene you want to drop it into. And that's destroyed a lot of commercial product photography and advertising photography because you don't really have to make those things anymore. But again, that settled because I still know plenty of product photographers that do lots and lots of work. So yeah, I think keep an eye on stuff like this. And it will push photographers, I think, to have to find ways to discern themselves in their market with a unique style that you're not copying what other people are doing. Because guess what? That's what AI does. AI is just copying a bunch of other photographers, right? What you should be doing is looking for ways to make your images look very different than what they're going to get out of an AI in whatever way. Make your experience better. And people with money who want to spend money on an experience will always, you know, go for something boutique over something that they're just going to, or they might find a use for those AI generated crap photos, or they might be good enough for what they're doing. You might not be the answer to their problem. It's just finding the people to whom you are the answer to the problem. But yeah, you definitely got to keep an eye on it. This is going to gut huge sectors of the industry. But I think that if you want to stay in photography, sort of moving into event, experience based and boutique business is what keeps you alive.
Leica news.
Hail Leica.
Hail Leica. Hail Leica. There are two stories in Leica news this week. Number one, the classic Leica SL2 is now available with a silver finish. The silver on top and on bottom, of course. The middle
so
is
so silvery.
So silvery. So basically, they've decided to make the Leica look like, oh, I don't know, Fuji's looked for the last 20 years. But you'll be happy to know that the new silver finish does not come with an increase in price. So the camera is still a mere $7,000.
Is that all? Yeah. Hot damn.
$7,000 for the Leica SL2 available in silver. But the other story that I really do enjoy, and I always love this when they have the big Leica auctions. I love seeing these Leica cameras that go for a lot of money. And we make fun of Leica, but this is the area in which I'm like, yeah, this makes sense to me. These aren't Pokemon cards where you can just go and produce a whole new batch of them if you want to. These are limited edition cameras. These are mechanical, made by hand, things that don't exist anymore. And there's only a few of them left, and therefore they should have value. So at auction, a Leica 35mm camera, this is a special camera that holds 250 photos. Now, that may not seem like much to us digital folks, but in the days of film, the biggest roll of film you would put in was 36.
Yeah.
Right. So this was it had these huge, big rolls on either side, and it would hold 250 negatives of film, and they were made. It was the 1936 Leica 250 GG reporter is what it was called. It held 10 meters of film, and it sold for $976,000 at auction. But here's why it's so unique. First of all, they didn't make that many of them. They only made 92 of them, and they made the camera, and then they also made a motor that goes on the bottom of the camera that advances it. So this is part of the whole play that makes it cool. So the motor and the camera, two things. And what sold was the motor and the camera. The motor that sold with the camera matches the serial number of the camera. And apparently this is extremely rare. Of the ones that are left in the world, there's only like 16, and I don't think they match up. And the reason is, and this is what I love about it, these cameras were primarily used in Stuka dive bombers in World War II as aerial reconnaissance cameras. And the motor was mounted in the bomber. And when the film was used, they would take the camera out and put another camera on top of that motor. So having a camera that matches its motor is exceedingly rare. And that's why this camera goes for $976,000 in very good condition. So I get a kick out of these. And I get to see these cameras. And you're just like, oh, look at this. How hard was it to make this camera back in the days before, you know, you could easily computer design things? And it must have been so hard to make these fine precision instruments. And the other thing I always love is whenever you see these old cameras that go for sale up for auction and sell for a lot, they're always just beat to hell. You know, the paint is scraped off and you're like, this camera has been used. Mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Where has this camera been? What has this camera seen? It's been passed down. And I love that about it. So as much as we make fun of Leica, I do very much enjoy when one of their rare cameras goes up for auction.
Yeah, I think that's, I wonder if that, because it's matched up with the motor, if it was maybe potentially not used.
Well, it looks to be in pretty good shape, but it's definitely scratched up. You can see on all the edges, you can see where the black paint has been scratched off. You can see what appear almost looks like copper, brass. It's got to be brass, brass underneath, you know, and it's really, really cool. You know, I like it.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. Hail Leica forever and always. Let's talk about Canon news. What do you say?
All right.
All right, a couple of quick ones. According to Canon rumors, it's fairly reliable to say that they believe that the EOS R5 Mark II will be announced in the fourth quarter, which is not as far away as you think. So looking at Q4 for that replacement. Now, what's interesting about this is that what's also been rumored for a long time is like a very high megapixel version of the R5, like a 90 or 100 megapixel version of the R5. And I think this is interesting because if you have like an R5 and then like an R5 Plus or whatever the heck they call it, or R5S, I think is the naming convention Canon's used in the past, it kind of reminds me a little bit of what Fuji did with the X-H2 and the X-H2S, right? So you've got like a lower megapixel version one and a higher megapixel version one. And I think that, I wonder if that's what's going to end up happening in the fourth quarter. But I think all they'd have to do is make an R5 that doesn't overheat. And I think they, I think people would buy that, you know. But yeah. The thing is, I had the R5 for 3 years now, and it's so stinking good and reliable that it would take something really, really special to motivate me to move to the next version of it. And I don't know what that would be. I couldn't think of anything the camera doesn't do right now that I would want. But I guess, you know, I guess we'll see. But moving on into that, there are some rumors circulating around about the R1. Canon technically doesn't really have a mirrorless flagship right now. And everybody's just kind of waiting to see what happens. In fact, Sony will probably have their second version out of the A1 or the A9. What's their flagship? I always forget which one that is. Let's see. Yeah, well, it doesn't matter. Whatever the Sony expensive flagship one is, that's the A1 or the A9. But they will have a second version out probably before Canon actually ever gets their mirrorless flagship out. But
yeah, I wonder what the holdup is on that.
I think the only thing I can really think of is that you can't say supply chain issues anymore, because Nikon designed and rolled out the Z8, you know, like, and with no back orders really. But this, I think there's a couple of things they're going to do that haven't been done before. According to Canon rumors, they're going to put the largest OLED panel on a camera onto this thing. So it's going to have, instead of a 3.2-inch back screen, it's going to have like a 4-inch back screen, which is, when you think about it, that's an insanely large screen. So that should be kind of cool. The other thing is, I think that they're trying to launch it with some technology that's going to be relatively new. People are talking about a global shutter. People are talking about having it be 45 megapixels, which they've stayed away from in like their flagship cameras, because these are sports and event cameras and paparazzi cameras and, you know, photojournalist cameras that they need to shoot really fast. So the processing power you would have to bring to bear to be able to shoot a 45 megapixel file that quickly is pretty intense. And so I'm sure that they want that to be really flawless. So we may see a new sensor, a completely new sensor, we may see a completely new processor. And now they're looking for the release of the QPAF, where Canon's very famous for its dual pixel autofocus. So they're talking about a quad pixel autofocus, which, I mean, Canon's already got kind of the best autofocus in the industry, maybe Sony. So get even better. Yeah, I don't know how much better it could get, but maybe people said that before other cool things came out, like seatbelts in a car. I don't know. It's really hard to say. I'm sure that like it has to be impressive, because basically you could buy something like the R3 or Nikon Z8 or Nikon Z9, and the flagship cameras that have come out from other brands are so, so impressive. To wait this long, you really need to come out with something big.
It needs to be groundbreaking and expensive.
Yeah. Oh, it'll be, there's no question it'll be expensive. But like, can you imagine if Canon comes out with the R1? And it's like, yeah, it's about the same as the Z9.
Right. It can't be. It's got to be, you know, it's got to be the flagship. It's got to be the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Right. Canon is historically really, really good at every decade or so coming out with a camera that completely changes things. They did it with the 5D Mark II, you know, doing HD video, that cinematic style. They when the R5 came out, 8K video, they do stuff that really pushes the limits about every 10 years or so. So kind of they're due, I think, and to really change the game before too long. So we shall see, I guess. I know several people who have the R3 that are perfectly happy with it and don't really care that it doesn't that it has 24 megapixels instead of like 100, because that's not what the people who need that camera, need to use that camera, want. But we'll see. Keep an eye on it. And as soon as the world knows something, I'm sure everybody already follows all these websites, so they'll find out.
So there was a story this week that is really a minor thing, but I just thought it was cool because it's like about time. Thank you. It's about time. And that is that MGM Properties, MGM owns like probably 7 casinos now in Las Vegas and all over the world, that they have relaxed their cell phone picture policy. For years, forever, the rule has always been you can't take pictures inside a casino. Now, you and I, we've spent some time in MGM Properties. They own the Mirage.
Specifically, like at the tables, right?
Like at the tables. But I mean, over time, you could see that we're like, you're not going to stop people from taking pictures in an aisle of their friends or whatever at the Mirage. Yeah, WPPI. They did that. This is a wave you can't stop. But they don't let you take pictures of the tables, and they don't let you text on your phone if you're at the table, and so forth and so on. And MGM has now relaxed that property. They say that it's an effort to get younger people into the casino. Now, I don't think that younger people aren't going into the casino because they can't take more pictures. I don't think that's what's keeping them out. I don't know what is keeping them out, but that's not it.
You know what? You know, it's because of the wage stagnation and crippling student loan debt, probably.
Yeah, yeah, it could be something along those lines.
That's probably what keeps people out of the casino. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, and so, but still, they say that now that MGM has done it, that it's going to be. I predict that it will be industry wide.
Well, that's like half the casinos on the Strip.
Yeah, they own like 7 casinos on the Strip. They owned the Mirage, where WPPI was held until they sold it to Hard Rock. And so now you will be able to take pictures at a table. You will be able to text at a table, but you can't text while playing a hand. A lot of these rules are kind of already in place in poker. So because like in poker was in the casinos, poker was the first ones to be like, okay, we want guys to come in here and sit down and play for 9-10 hours straight. We can't tell them they can't use their phones.
Yeah, that's just not practical.
So, yeah, right? I remember originally, like, you couldn't have your phone sitting on the table. And you could. Now it's like guys come in with, like, a rack. They sit down and play poker. They have their phone on a little rack sitting in front of them, and they're watching Law and Order while they're playing cards. You know, it's like no one questions what you do with your phone. You can't be texting on your phone while you're involved in a hand. You can't do that. You can't take a phone call while you're involved in a hand. But anything else is fine. I remember recently I was in a hand, and there was a big jackpot where a guy qualified for the jackpot and then got beat by somebody who had a better qualifier for the jackpot. And it's just something you don't normally see. It was like 4 of a kind got beat by a straight flush.
And that like, is not common.
Yeah, and you're like, oh my gosh, da 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 da. And a couple of people whooped out their phones to take a picture of the table to show, you know, the hands. And the dealer was like, the dealer wouldn't look up. The dealer was like, y'all aren't supposed to be doing that, so I'm not going to be paying attention to what's going on right now. Because he knew, you're not going to stop people from taking a picture of something cool that just happened. You know, even though the rule says you're not supposed to take pictures of the table. So that's really the only thing that you've seen a lot in the poker room. But now we're seeing it migrate out to the rest of the casinos. And I'm like, it's about time. You cannot stop the cell phone generation from taking pictures of every friggin' thing.
Yeah, it's the thing that, like what you said first, is like, I don't know if that's the thing that's keeping them out. Can you imagine all of a sudden, like, there's a bunch of kids who want to gamble? And by kids, I mean 18 and up, you know, 18s and 20 somethings. And they're like, do you guys hear? We can bring our phones to the tables now. Let's go.
Let's go. I'm addicted to blackjack, but I couldn't use my phone, so I stopped going.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, I don't think it's one of those. It's like people who are like, with the exception of people with like government clearance or random drug testing at their jobs, there's like, there's not a whole bunch of people that want to be smoking weed that aren't smoking weed, right? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if you want to get high, you're gonna get high, you know, unless you're really in a position where like something will, you know, you could get in real trouble with your job. But for most people, it's like, yeah, if I want to get high, I get high. It's not that big a deal, you know. So I don't think that there are a whole bunch of kids out there looking to gamble that just have been like, well, since they won't let me bring my phone in, screw you, slot machines. Like, I don't know.
Well, I think that what it's really about is the advertising potential, because I think now they're like, now you can, when you're in the casino, you can take pictures that you can even live stream. You have to get permission, but you can live stream in the casino. So that's what they want. They want more young people, more influencers. They want them in the casino. Hey, I'm in the Mirage. Hey, I'm in the park. I'm in, you know, whatever. I'm in the
Cosmopolitan. Or how about I just want $1,000 in a hand of blackjack?
Exactly. That's what they want. They want that out there.
Because you know who's not streaming? The guy who just lost $1,000 on a hand of blackjack. That guy's not taking a selfie.
Why did it take you so long? You know, because traditionally, the reason you can have cameras in casinos was because other gamblers didn't want pictures of them gambling out there.
You know, right, because mobsters. Then your wife finds out. Yeah.
Yeah. Meyer Lansky is over there playing blackjack. He doesn't want a picture. That was it. But I think at some point you actually just go, that ship has sailed. You know, your picture's being taken everywhere. And there's security cameras all over the casino. So that ship has sailed. So let's let people take pictures so we can promote this on social media the same way everything else in the world is promoted now.
Let's promote gambling and make the world a better place.
Absolutely.
Let's do it. So we got a quick hit here from Capture One. If you are not aware, Capture One for iPad has been out for a little while. I use it pretty much every day. I'm going to use it 5 minutes after we're done recording because I've got a session coming in. It's probably about the best tethering experience you'll ever have, to be honest. But they also now have Capture One for your phone, which is getting kind of mixed, not great reviews, but Capture One for iPad did when it first came out, and then they added a bunch of functionality to it that made it way, way better. So they just sort of like got it out. On a side note, I don't think that consumers necessarily understand the concept of the minimum viable product. It's like make it function and then get it out there, and then we'll improve it as we go. So they call that the MVP in development. But anyways, the Capture One, you know, has the subscription, or you can buy the license in perpetuity. And they also have Capture One Live, which is really cool, which is the ability to sort of create live web galleries that sync with your Capture One session. So right now, I'm paying $20 a month for Capture One on the monthly plan, right? Now they have an all-in-one bundle where you can get Capture One, unlimited Capture One Live events, which normally cost $5 per event. You can get and Capture One for iPad and Capture One for your phone, all for, if you pay for the whole year, it's $18 a month, and you get all of those in. So they have right now, it's called an early bird bundle. And you know what? Personally, right now, screw Capture One for your phone, although I'm sure it would do, you know, good processing on images. Just to be able to have iPad, right now I'm paying $25 a month for Capture One for desktop and iPad. Like, I could get both for $18 a month right now, plus all of the Capture One Live events. If you do, like, you know, commercial photography where people are looking at your images, or you're doing headshots where people are selecting on site using Capture One Live, like, you have all of that built in and save like a ton of money. So it's actually a pretty darn good deal. I believe that's temporary. So by looking on their site, it's called early bird pricing. So I would check that out if you're a Capture One user. I think that's a really good deal. And it's one of those things that when you get in on that deal, I believe very much that price is going to go up before too long. So I would jump on that if I was and I'm going to, actually. I already have Capture One, my account pulled up, to see how I can make that happen.
Our final story this week has to do with someone stealing photos. David Francisci.
Wait, we got to do the stinger.
There's a stinger for stolen photos?
Yeah, where you go like, wow, 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 busted. That one.
Yeah, but that wasn't specifically for this. It was for something else, wasn't it?
You don't say you don't want to do it anymore.
I don't remember it.
All you got to do is go.
Okay.
Wow, 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 wow. Busted.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. We got it.
I'm glad I could bring a little joy to you.
You bring a lot of joy.
An Italian man, David, I'm guessing Francisci is his name. I'm going to take a shot at that. And he entered the WPE Awards. Won a couple of awards, came in like second, third, stuff like that. And then they found out that he had stolen the photos. And what I found intriguing about this was where the photos came from and what he said about it. He stole from a couple of different sources, but one of the sources was from a course that he took. He had bought like a commercial photography course from somebody. And there were photos included in the course to show you, you know, here's how you can take these pictures, or, you know, to give you examples. And he said, I didn't know. I'm so sorry. I thought that those pictures, I could do whatever I wanted with those pictures. Okay.
Like, and one of the things that I believe that I could do is to enter them into a photography competition and put my name on them.
Yes, and claim them as my own. I mean, it's not like you said, I thought I could do whatever I wanted with these pictures, so I put them on my website or something like that, which would be equally bad, but...
I don't think that's equally bad. I don't. I think that's, I, you could much more easily convince me that that was an honest mistake.
Right. That, well, if you were like, I just put there to show examples of the sort of work I could do. Okay. I can make that. But you cannot make that excuse.
Still with stupid, a competition. But not quite as stupid. Like, this guy is either the world's biggest dumbass or he's a liar.
Yeah. I just don't see how you could possibly think that it was okay to just take someone else's photo and enter it into a contest under your name. Like, what I can't get behind that is, okay, let's give you the benefit of the doubt. Okay. What were you thinking was the, why do you win? why do you win? If you think it's okay to enter that, when they come back and go, you won first place, then you get to go, great, I won first place because...
We're going to give you $10,000 for right-clicking and copying some images up.
Right.
Imagine if, like, the International Photographic Competition or the Australian Photography Awards or the Sony Artisan or whatever these... There's millions of these contests about, and they were like, you can enter any photo you can find on the internet, I'd be like, okay, going over to Ben Shirk's website, and that's mine.
Yeah. Only thing I can wrap my head around is if it was one of those where if somehow you thought, well, this isn't a contest about recognizing photographers. This is a contest who is that it's in search of the best image. So this everybody enter any images you can find, and we're going to try and find the best one and celebrate that it's the best one without knowing who took it.
That's a bit of a stretch.
It's a huge stretch. It's the only possible stretch, and there's no way it's legit.
Yeah. So, nice try, but no one believes you. That's the answer to that one.
No one's going to believe that. It's just ridiculous. And to me, it always in these situations, it always begs the deeper question, because we've covered it so many times, of where is your head and your psyche at that you take some sort of satisfaction out of doing it?
And the more important question is, are horses born with teeth?
That's, of course, the big question of the day.
Yeah.
That's the pressing question of the day.
That's what we all live to find out. What's one of the great existential question?
Photobomb is written and produced by Bure Perry and Gary Hughes, and it's edited by Face Fioretti. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/groups/Bombardiers Lounge.
Boom booters.
Our website is photobombpodcast.com. Gary's website is hughesfioretti.com.
So it is.
Mine is bureperry.com, and you can email us questions@photobombpodcast.com. We'll see you back here next week.
See you later.